This is Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. After the shooting in Tucson, Arizona on Saturday, one particular soundbite grabbed everyone's attention. It was from the Pima County Sheriff, Clarence Dupnik.
And I think it's time as a country that we need to do a little soul searching, because I think it's the vitriolic rhetoric that we hear day in and day out from people in the radio business and some people in the TV business, and what we see on TV and how our youngsters are being raised, that this has not become the nice United States of America that most of us grew up in.
And just like that, all over the airwaves, talking heads began pointing fingers. It's one thing, however, to hold shock jocks and cable pundits to task. It's another thing to give a pass to the Wild West of social media, where information, misinformation, and superheated rhetoric always run at full tilt. Sheriff Dupnik is right. This is not the nice United States of America that most of us grew up in. We're now living in the United States of Twitter, the Republic of Facebook. So who's going to do the soul searching in the online world? And how? Two people who are active watchers and thinkers of all things web join me now to wrestle with those questions. Josh Benton is the director of the Nieman Journalism Lab at Harvard. Welcome to Radio Boston, Josh.
Great to be here.
And also with us is Andrew Phelps. He writes the Hubbub blog and reports for WBUR.org. Hey there, Andrew.
Hi, Meghna. And I'm running for secretary-treasurer of the United States of Twitter. Just wanted to get my candidacy out there.
And I'm sure you're micro-fundraising to make that happen. But, Josh, over the weekend, when the Tucson shooting actually happened, you were both watching the coverage through mainstream, old, legacy media, whatever you want to call it, and also online. So how did that differ?
Well, I learned about the shooting online. I saw it on CNN.com and did something I don't often do, which is turn on CNN, and started immediately seeing a divergence between how the web was dealing with the shooting and how mainstream media was, how the networks were. CNN and MSNBC were being very responsible, very dry. You think of television as a hot medium that can sometimes get emotional, but it was the exact opposite. Whereas on Twitter, A, the emotion level was much higher. People were angry. People were expressing themselves in a very verbal sort of way. And also, the topic really shifted from what happened, the details on the scene, what happened at this shopping center, to passing around copies of this map that Sarah Palin had
or infamous crosshairs map.
Exactly, or the video of the congresswoman some months earlier on MSNBC talking about threats. It's an interesting inversion, because in some ways Twitter was providing the context and the emotion in a way that television you think of as being better at doing that in some way.
Which then eventually reverberated back into television and radio media. But Andrew, you were sort of doing this dual screen witnessing of the events as well.
I didn't actually have any television on or at first even our own radio station. I was enjoying a Saturday morning and saw the first trickling in of the tweets, and it almost didn't register what had happened. I didn't even really take it seriously. It was shocking news. But very quickly, the speed with which Twitter was overtaken by this story was amazing, even to me.
And when we say quickly, what do we mean? Minutes, hours,
after
absolutely.
The shooting. If not things changing in seconds. Whereas traditional breaking news, I think, reports the facts of the case the best that they know how and as fast as they're able. Where blogs and social media are strong is in drawing new connections, either between stories that are old, such as bringing back this Palin map, or between stories that are being reported right now. They're not necessarily reporting news, these tweets and blog posts, but they're raising implications, they're drawing connections, they're speculating in a way that the news media can't really touch and takes several hours or sometimes days to catch up on.
Well, you say drawing new connections. I mean, sometimes those connections can be rather tenuous because there isn't an established editorial process of any kind that I can imagine that goes on when people are just retweeting other people's tweets, Josh.
Well, I mean, when news organizations deal with breaking news, they talk about their major tools being the reporters on the ground. For people in the social media world, it's often Google. It's trying to figure out what these connections can be, digging up these sorts of documents. And I think that's a powerful compliment. You're right that it doesn't have the same hierarchical nature that traditional media does. There aren't a series of editors looking over everything, so you're going to get a lot of speculation. I think it's best to think about Twitter and social media as being a verbal medium. It's a lot closer to the kind of conversations people are having offline than it is to traditional news.
Well, in characterizing it as a verbal medium, what kind of things are people saying in terms of the political rhetoric? Because, I mean, the Sheriff Dupnik was talking about television and radio and the heated rhetoric there. Is it equally heated or not on places like Twitter and Facebook?
Well, I think in a lot of cases, the format of the medium influences the kind of content that goes through it. Twitter as a medium doesn't lend itself to long, extended rants because you've got 140 characters to work with. It lends itself to a link to something and a wry commentary on top of it or an expression of emotion. So I think that the medium does form that message, but I think in the end, you have to think of social media as the voice of the audience in a lot of ways. It's the kinds of things that people are saying back to you. You just never heard them before. They've been saying it for decades. You just can go type something at search.twitter.com and find it now.
Though I do think brevity encourages sharpness of tongue.
Well, because, I mean, that's what it's most likely to gather people's or grab people's attention. There are also times where it's the media that uses Twitter and Facebook to speak to the audience. And Andrew, we here at WBUR and you in particular have had experience with that regarding this story in Tucson.
That's right. The story about the story became quite interesting. So as I mentioned, I'm at home on Saturday. It's now 2:01 p.m. and NPR reports, and I believe first that Representative Giffords had been killed. After I heard NPR say it a second time, I tweeted on behalf of WBUR's official station account that she had died and tweeted a link to the story. As far as I'm able to determine, we were the first news organization on Twitter to report this news. NPR followed on the web shortly after its radio product broke the news. And the retweets spread like wildfire. And then when NPR tweeted the news, it overtook Twitter. There were so many people talking about the fact that she had died and that NPR was reporting it, and that's what the bloggers took up. Obviously, that was wrong. Even though it was NPR's error, it was our error as well. The same.
In this age of instant retweets and millions upon millions of them, how do you deal with catching up to an error, I mean, which is way out there in the universe already?
Well, we immediately followed up with a tweet saying there are conflicting reports about her condition and this may be wrong. And then, of course, as the news developed that she was in critical condition, we updated that. Our followers were that as well. The debate arose over whether to delete the original erroneous tweet. You couldn't delete an erroneous newspaper story 50 years ago, but you have this great power of deleting digital text now. I asked our users whether they thought we should get rid of it. There was some pretty impassioned and divided responses, and I'll briefly give you a sense of it. One person on screen said, "Should have deleted and tweeted with acknowledgement. You'd have removed the possible source of bad information while not appearing to be hiding." Another person, Todd Flitzy, "I don't think you should delete. Twitter is real time, and it shows how breaking news flows. Post new tweets to continue the story." We decided not to delete the tweet. We decided to leave it there as part of the record of how the story unfolded and to explain to people that it was erroneous.
So, Josh Benton of the Nieman Journalism Lab at Harvard. The reason why this is so interesting is that the Tucson shooting story tragically actually tells us two really big issues or complications to deal with when it comes to social media and how people gather their information from it. One is, as you said, it's the audience speaking. There are millions upon millions of people speaking. Two, the speed at which information, or sometimes whether it be purposeful or accidental misinformation spreads, is real time. So in that case, in this call that we heard from Sheriff Dupnik in that cut at the top, and all these people now talking about increasing the civility in our discourse, how do you increase civility, or is that even a question in social media?
Well, first of all, I'd like to say that the issues of having incorrect information repeated, that's not a new thing for social media. Go back to think about...
But the speed of it, I think, is...
Well,
is
live television and live radio do a pretty good job of spreading messages to really wide audiences very quickly as well. I mean, if you think back to September 11th, long before social media was really anyone's, main concern, think about how many misconceptions people still have 10 years later about what happened that day and the rumors that were erroneously reported on, not in social media, but on television for the most part, and how many of them, never got corrected. So I don't think this is a fundamentally new question.
Not necessarily, but when some of this reporting, or people's observations, if they were there in Tucson, for example, is coming from Twitter to begin with, let's say, and then it gets retweeted all over the place. So don't you naturally have this dilution of responsibility when you just have millions of people spreading the information?
Well, I think that would be true if those millions of people had similar size polarized audience. There's a reason that, as Andrew said, that when NPR tweeted this news, it had a huge impact. That's because NPR has an established brand, a good reputation, and people believe what comes out of that Twitter account. Mm-hmm. If it's just some random guy in Tucson saying, "I think I heard something down the street," it would be a relatively rare occurrence for that to reach a huge audience without the amplification of a major news organization or someone who has a major following on Twitter.
And Andrew, what are your thoughts about that? I mean, because you're sort of our manager here for WBUR Tweets. What's your thought process when you try and figure out what's tweetable and what's not?
Yeah, it's an awesome power, you know, having the password to a Twitter account that thousands of people follow. A number of people, I should say, that approaches the number of people who listen to us on any average quarter hour on the radio. So, you know, I'm tweeting on my personal account, Andrew Phelps, as well as the station account, WBUR, and I tend to report on that account the stories of the most vital significance. Obviously, the death, or what we thought was the death, of Giffords was pretty substantial. That said, you don't want to get it wrong, and there was a lot of discussion about whether we might be second-guessing information before putting it out there on Twitter for the world to see. Our answer is an unequivocal no. I mean, if I'm going to trust what my colleagues on other media are reporting and vetting, and I won't second guess a colleague just because it's being reported on a different platform.
Josh Benton, let me ask you, some people might see the chaos and energy in the social media space as a beautiful thing. Other people might see it as a completely terrifying thing. But what I wonder is, nevertheless, even in this very disorganized system, there are some emerging forms of self-regulation. Like, for example, I was on Amazon today, and that's Amazon. But on the other hand, when you look at the people's ratings of various products, many people now use their real names. And I believe on Twitter, people use their real names, too. So are we moving towards, is a form of self-regulation going to emerge in the online space?
We've already seen this both within traditional media working on Twitter and other media, and also seeing it from non-media folks. People feel a sense of responsibility attached to what comes to their account. Now, I will say it's not the same sense of responsibility if they're sharing what someone else had to say. If I pass along something that NPR says or that the New York Times says on Twitter, I'm going to feel pretty good about it, even if it turns out that the New York Times ends up being wrong and running a correction the next day. So that sense of responsibility differs on whether it's your own eyewitness account, whether you're sharing something that you saw, whether it's third-hand knowledge. But I think, you know, we're evolving systems to figure out what to trust and what not to trust. On the issue of whether or not to delete that tweet, Twitter has done a good job over time of evolving the network to so that, for example, you can show that one tweet is a response to another tweet to show the interrelation of things. And I wouldn't be surprised if in a year or two we had a situation where the Twitter was able to say, when you have a tweet that's erroneous, you can label it as a false tweet that will connect to the corrected tweet. I think these media are still very fluid, and we're going to evolve a lot of these methods of communication quite a bit.
Andrew, your thoughts?
Well, I sort of view Twitter, people call Twitter a social network. I call it more of an information network. It's sort of like my police scanner at work. I mean, I'm not necessarily reading everything, but there are trends emerging that catch my eye and that might cause me to talk to an editor or tell a colleague, hey, we should talk about this. I think trust on Twitter is the same as trust with any outlet. I mean, I might trust a NewYorkTimes.com story before I trust a blog post, but a blog post might open my eyes to something I didn't know about and might cause me to dig a little bit deeper. What's unique about Twitter is that we can build the networks ourselves as users. We can map out this information flow. And I think in part it's up to us, the consumers, to decide what we trust and what we don't.
Well, we hope that you trust Radio Boston, and you can always tweet us. We're at Radio Boston, and you can also find us on Facebook, also at Radio Boston, as well. Andrew Phelps, Hubbub blogger and reporter for WBUR.org, thank you so much.
Thank you.
And Josh Benton, director of the Nieman Journalism Lab at Harvard University, really thank you so much, and hope to have you back sometime soon.
Thank you.